So when my ancestors entered into treaty with non-Indigenous people, they did it by their own will. They weren't forced to. They weren't coerced into doing that. They, at the time, there was settlement happening out east, and there were things happening on the land that really bothered Indigenous people in this area. For example, the Hudson's Bay was selling our land without our knowledge and consent. And there were surveyors coming onto the land that began to survey the land without letting us know what was happening. And so that was part of what was happening at the time of treaty making. And another component of this is in 1763, the Royal Proclamation was initiated by the Queen, King George, and what was stated in there was that in order to enter into Indigenous lands and territory, you had to make treaty. There was an acknowledgement that Indigenous peoples had sovereignty over the land and that our nations were nations that were sovereign, and you had to make treaty. So that was some of the historic context of what was happening when the number treaties began to be made. It was also an expression of Indigenous jurisdiction over our territories and saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, the Hudson's Bay and all this other stuff that's happening without our consent, we still own and have jurisdiction over our lands and territory, and we didn't give consent for that to happen. So we're going to make a treaty to express and show that we still have jurisdiction over our lands. So when the treaty commissioners came to the areas now, Fort Pitt, Fort Carleton, and they were discussing what was to be contained within Treaty 6, the treaty commissioner came to the chiefs and headmen, and there was the discussion that the treaty was to be made for peace and friendship. And I know when you look at the written text, how many people have actually looked at the written text of Treaty 6 or any treaty? Okay, not many. But basically the gist of what's in that written text is the cede, surrender, yield up, release clauses. Those are the clauses that most people think about when they think about treaty. And I'm here to tell you that that's not true. And 150 years later, we're still waiting for those treaties to be acknowledged, recognized, honored, and implemented, because we say that the written text is a complete misrepresentation of what our understanding of treaties meant. And there's a story behind that, and Sylvia actually knows a lot more about this than I do, but I'm just going to share a little bit about that. We say that the treaties were peace and friendship, and they were not land deals. They were not land surrender deals, because at the time of treaty, and now, the women hold the jurisdiction over lands and water. And because women were not the signatories to the treaty, we sent the men to negotiate on our behalf, and we told them what we wanted. In our societies, the men are just the speaker. I don't mean just, but they're the speakers. The women hold the authority and the power, and we are the laws, the law keepers and the lodge owners. Many people don't know that. They think that because the men are out there speaking and are in the front that the men have the power, but they don't. It's the women that hold the power and the jurisdiction. So the reason why this was not a land deal was because the women were not the signatories to the treaty at the time. We sent the men out there to negotiate for us, and we told them specifically what was to be contained within that. So that's the reason why, that's one of the reasons why we know that we never gave away the land. We never ceded or surrendered the land. And before the treaty was, I hate saying signed, but I'm going to say signed. Before the treaty was made, because we didn't technically sign the documents, even though there are X's on those pieces of paper, we made the treaty. So we participated in that process. Days leading up to the signatory celebratory celebration of that, there were ceremonies done for days that assisted my ancestors in developing the terms that were to be contained within the promises made to us. And that deal was solidified with the use of our treaty pipe. And there's not, like, the pipe doesn't just have a spiritual significance. We don't just do that for the sake of doing that because we have to. As I keep saying, it's our unwritten constitution. And I can't give those, I don't have the authority to give the teachings that are contained within that. It takes a lifetime for some people to learn and understand the significance of what is contained in that ceremony. And each direction of that pipe is very specific instructions and spirits and of what is held there. So that's why this was done. We say that there were three parties to that treaty: the Indigenous people, non-Indigenous, and the Creator. And I'm going to share with you a couple of those teachings, because I'm sure that many of you have never heard or have heard this teaching. And it's important for you to understand that this, like, the pipe and these teachings and what you're learning in terms of this, like, the spirit of the land and what this conference is about, is very much connected to the ceremonies that we do. So this is one component of the spirit and intent part of treaty. And you would never learn this in a book. Never. You learn this out on the land with elders. And this takes, I've been learning this for maybe 15 years, and I know like this much. In the academic world, I'm supposed to be an expert in law and governance, but I'm not. I'm in our world, I'm like in kindergarten, learning our laws. That's the difference between studying in a Western context and learning in an Indigenous way. So you can see up there, we call this our natural laws. And each of these elements is contained within our understanding of treaty. So we have the law of honesty, which is represented by the tree. And the tree teaches us to stand tall and to be straight and to be honest in our everyday thoughts, our everyday actions with people and each other. And we have the buffalo, which is representative of sharing, the principle and law of sharing. We have the mountain, which is representative of strength and determination. And we have kindness, which is representative of the sweetgrass. And the sweetgrass, the teaching behind that is that we can step all over the sweet grass. We can step all over. We can step all over it. It still grows, and it's one of the medicines that we use in our ceremony. And each one of these elements, when you put them together, you get a pipe. So the rock is the bowl of the pipe. The tree is the stem. When you're having a ceremony, you have food, and you need the medicine to be able to light the pipe. And in the center is the spiritual fire that we all contain within us. And that red line that's in the middle, that's what we call the Red Road or the Sweetgrass Trail. And that's the path that we live based on our cultural, spiritual practices and understandings. And when, I'm sure that many of you have heard this phrase, as long as the sun shines and the waters flow. And that's very shortened for our what contains our understanding of what treaty is. And what that means is, and Sylvia was one of the teachers, she taught me one of the teachings on this, in addition to my auntie. The 4 days that were preceding the treaty talks and the time of treaty making, we held our ceremonies. And in the ceremony, we were asking for guidance from the spirit realm of what was to be contained within the treaty. And each one of these spirits came in and said, base the treaty for as long as the sun shines, because the sun is always going to shine. You need sun to survive. Base the treaty for as long as the waters flow. And water is water, not just being water, water also being what the women carry to give and bring life into this world. So as long as women are giving birth to children into our nations, this treaty will last. This is our oral teaching of treaty. This comes from the late Peter O'Chees, who is a very well-respected Ojibwe elder. This was taught to me by my Auntie Diane, and it was taught to her by him. And I also have learned some of this from my grandfather, Jimmy O'Chees, who is the son of the late Peter O'Chees.